This is the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi and Patrick Maher on VSiN.
Okay, so Lombardi Line, presented by BetMGM here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. You know, we tend to conflate when we have a weekend like we just had. We'll then start to try to compare it because for us, every football weekend's great. But those four games, I mean, you had four walk-offs, Michael Lombardi, here on the Lombardi Line. It doesn't get much better than that. Field goal, field goal, field goal. Then you had the touchdown pass to Kelce. As far as the walk-off there with Kansas City, you see the opener. We'll just throw up the numbers quickly here to get you set up. Seven is the number right now in Kansas City for the Bengals. Do you, to Will's point, do you consider a letdown a possibility here for the Chiefs?
No, I think they'll be more exhausted. I think they can really rally it up. The fact that Cincinnati beat them before certainly is going to help them. I think there's no doubt about that. The thing we did say going into this was anyone – could beat any other team. We thought Pittsburgh, we could eliminate Pittsburgh from beating any team, but the other 13 teams in the tourney, we thought had a chance. And I think we see it by the seedings, right? You know, two playing four, four playing six. And those are really hard to, you know, one, two, and three from the NFC are out. I mean, the best team from the best two teams in the NFC are the two teams in the West. Shows you the power of that conference. And if you're Steve Keim or if you're John Schneider, I mean, you know, that's a hard thing to play. You got two of your best teams are there playing for the conference championship with guys that, you know, they have quarterbacks that they feel like, whether they keep Garoppolo or not, but they're a good team. So I just felt it was so even, and I think even the way the games went, yesterday it was a dog weekend. The weekend before, it was a favorite weekend. This weekend usually this weekend is always, for me, home teams win. And the most rested team, the two most rested teams with the only buys the first time, out in the first game.
Well, speaking of rest and logistics, can't set up for a better spot for the Rams, right? So they're going to host San Francisco. I mean, just outside looking in, they're going to host San Francisco, and the Super Bowl is being played there at SoFi. 3.5. By the way, that 3.5 is closer to 3. Every shop has got 3.5 with the Rams laying it, but you see the juice. It's even at a couple of shops. It's 105, so could be headed to 3 here.
Yeah, and I mean, and the other, conversely, a lot of them are at 7 at 115 or 110, you know, so. You know, it's interesting. Last year, the Bucs got to play home. You know, when my first Super Bowl was when we played in Stamford Stadium against the Miami Dolphins in 1984. That was a home game for us. You know, even though we didn't play it in Candlestick Park, it was right down the street from our facility. So, but this is kind of interesting. Now we have 2 years in a row, the potential for a home team to play in the Super Bowl is somewhat really remarkable. And, you know, I think it's, you know, I think if Kansas City plays either the Rams or the 49ers or Cincinnati, can they, you know, I have such a hard time getting over Cincinnati because bad offensive lines don't travel. And even though they beat Tennessee last week, I just didn't think, to me, it was Tennessee losing, not Cincinnati winning. Credit to them. I'm not disputing it. But I have a hard time winning my thinking that they're going to go into Kansas City and duplicate that again. I think it's a little bit like the year Tennessee surprised everybody. Remember, they went into New England and won. They went into Baltimore and won. Then they ran into Kansas City, and it was over.
Let's dip back into Saturday. We have some time here, and let's discuss that. In your lifetime, I mean, I guess we saw it with Warren Moon back in the day, but if you said you're going to get sacked 9 times and win a football game, that is like what Burrow and Cincinnati did down in Tennessee is wild.
I mean, I'm going to study it today, but the protection schemes. I mean, he squeezes the protection. He doesn't have somebody to block the outside edge, and yet he gets sacked. He's got to throw the ball hot off of that. You know, it's just, to me, these are problems that, whether it was on Burrow, whether it was on Zach Taylor's schemes, but this has been going on all year for them. And yet they were able to overcome them. I mean, Burrow's just such a great competitor. You know, and the things I think when you look at, what I was counting on why I recommended Tennessee never came out to fruition. Tennessee was a really good team on third down offense and third down defense. And in this game, they were horrible. Tennessee was a really good team in red zone offense and red zone defense. And in this game, they were horrible. And that's what happens in single elimination. Not necessarily the best team wins. The best team that day wins. And Tennessee, which I thought would play much better off the bye week, played their worst game. To throw an interception on the opening play of the game is, to me, really disappointing. And You know, I think that's going to eat at Mike Vrabel for a long, long time. I think he's going to have a hard time understanding how, you know, they didn't move the ball with more clarity and more domination, especially considering they had every opportunity. I mean, you got third and one from your own 35 with 8 minutes to go in the game. But I mean, at the Bengals 35, and you're in shotgun, going to run the read option with Tannehill, and you're not going to give the ball to either Foreman, who's averaging almost 10 yards a run, or give it to Henry. I mean, Foreman had four carries in the game for 66 yards.
Yeah, he looked great. He looked,
I mean, and then you're going to give it to Tannehill. I mean, like, I just think, to me, there are certain calls, and I've said this repeatedly, third and shorts determine these games. They determine every single playoff game, and it cost Tennessee.
Well, Titans were 1-for-7 on third downs as well. You know, I'm just thinking about, because I'm looking at the numbers. So Tannehill had three picks, right? I think there were three combined by the other quarterbacks.
And they lost. Not only did he have three picks, that turnover on downs is a turnover. It doesn't go in the category, but they're at the 35. They turned the ball over on downs. It's like the block punt. We don't count that as a turnover, but it was. And what makes the block punt, we said this on Sunday, what makes the block punt so hard to digest is the fact they weren't even trying to block it.
Right. Because if you look,
I mean, they were trying to return it. They were figuring they were going to get good field position off a return.
No picks last night from either Mahomes or Allen. Would Brady have a pick? No picks from Stafford. And then Garoppolo had one. Yeah, I mean, the three interceptions. Start off the game as well. Would they run that play action with Tannehill to start the game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it looked like they were trying to get it down the field, and he curled back and he brought it back, and the safety just read Tannehill's eyes and brought him right over to it. I mean, Bates made a really good play, but you would think that Tannehill would have been smarter. I mean, he's an experienced player, to make sure he looks off the safety, kind of moves him around a little bit. But, you know, I mean, look, they just didn't play. I thought, too, Tampa in the first half, and I tweeted this out. I mean, Tampa looked like they were not even ready to play. I mean,
listless.
Tampa looks like they've got something wrong. And I think Lavonte David said it after the game. It looked like there's a big disconnect within that locker room.
Lack of hunger, listlessness, what, after the championship?
I think it's certainly the ability to try to get back. It's hard. It's hard to repeat.
Yes,
you know, it's
is.
Really hard to repeat. And then you had a bunch of injuries. They had guys hurt, and it's hard when you lose players. You know, and we said it on the broadcast yesterday morning. I mean, McVay has always done a good job. This is three times in a row now he's beaten Brady. Right? It's three times in a row he's beaten Brady. He always does a good job against them. Whereas, you know, then we know San Francisco does a good job against him.
Von Miller shows up against Brady as well. I was thinking of that when I was watching the game.
It was amazing.
Yesterday.
Donovan Smith, I mean, if you were going to count on one guy playing pretty good for the Bucs, you would have thought it would have been Donovan Smith at left tackle, but he was horrendous. I mean, everybody was talking about Wells in the game, including me, and Wells, not that he played well, but, I mean, Smith probably was the most disappointing player in the game, you know, and they just couldn't execute. Brady didn't throw the ball well. I mean, there was nothing good about that game at all that Brady – I mean, first of all, he throws it 54 times. We said going in the game he can't do that. They did stop the run. I mean, the Rams had 30 carries for 73 yards, but they couldn't control the passing game. They never got control of the passing game. And Cooper Kupp had – again, he had 64 yards on the final drive of the game.
Yeah. Quickly on Saturday, an outright win and an under there, Cincinnati and Tennessee. BDV, Big Daddy Vince, your cousin, a big Packer fan, Vince Lombardi. As the dust has settled now on what happened at Lambeau, do you have more
classic
thoughts?
Yesterday.
Of course, the Packers closed 6, 47.
Well, he's very upset about, you know, he thinks it's over with for the Packers. LaFleur will get exposed as the bad coach. But what was, you know, also a part of the Big Daddy lore is he hates Brady. He thinks the red zone was Brady's dedicated channel. He's very anti all the winning that Brady's done, because it really kind of smacks at his quarterback who hasn't won like Brady has, right? You know, so last night he was in complete panic because
I didn't realize he was such a Brady hater, Big Daddy Vince.
Oh, yeah. Well, all those guys, everybody. Well, you know, there's a bunch of read Twitter. Everybody hates Brady because he wins too much, right?
Yes. Yes.
You know, you won't criticize your boy Lombardi. How do you criticize a guy who plays the game so good? Did he play good yesterday? Of course he didn't play. He would be the first one to tell you he didn't play good. Like, what do you want me to say? Oh, he's terrible. Don't put him in the Hall of Fame. He's not worthy. Okay, great. Yeah. Okay, perfect. Warren Moon's in there. He didn't win at one playoff game, but he's in there. Okay, we'll go back to that. But Big Daddy, like, all in the final minutes of the Buck game, I'm getting texts saying that if Brady wins this game, he's not watching football for the rest of the year. It was hilarious. I was like, "Are you kidding me?" And so then, when the Rams won, that I can watch football again.
Missed opportunity not having BDV on to preview that game in Lambeau on Saturday. We probably should have had him on just to get his thoughts.
He would have been completely negative. I mean, Big Daddy would have been. He would have told you. He told me yesterday when he came over the house. He said, "I knew they were going to lose." Well, I mean, like, I actually said this to him. And I think it was the right thing to say. I said, look, when they tied the game up at 10-10 with the block punt, I really felt like they were going to win the game, because at that point LaFleur had to be aggressive with his play calling. And then, you know, they're 3rd and 11, and he's got a guy, and he's got Lassard wide open on an in cut, and he throws it into double coverage. Why? Because that game shook up Rodgers. He didn't trust anybody, and the only person he trusted was really Adams. I mean, really, when you watch the tape, Randall Cobb was useless.
Brady says he's going to take it day to day. That's very new age, very present of him. Do you believe he's going to take it day to day? Do you think he's going to be in the Bucs?
What did you think when they showed the box of all the family in there?
I thought it was weird. They were celebrating.
They were happy, weren't they? Yeah, they were losing.
Giselle was in a great mood. It's good to see. Yeah. I like to see people in a good mood.
I think you better think about that for a while. Mull over that for a little bit.
I don't know what was happening. It was memento. It was everything was opposite. All right, we come back. It's the Lombardi Line.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
If you missed any part of our show or anything on the VSiN schedule today, don't forget to check out our free sports betting podcast. Every show, archive, podcast, VSiN.com/podcast. By the way, you can find the Lombardi Line now wherever, whatever platform you use to find your podcast, you can find the Lombardi Line. Just search for it. Catch replays of all the shows, Beating the Book, Gail Alexander. You get Market Insights with Josh Applebaum. You get Hardwood Handicappers, JVT, Lombardi Line, Follow the Money, My Guys in the Desert, Coast to Coast Hoops, and much more. They're all free, available now at vsin.com/podcast. It's vsin.com/podcast. So Matt Santos brought this up. I'd be curious to get your thoughts. Now, again, it'd be projection a little bit, but Brady's thoughts on Arians. Arians does have an unhinged and erratic quality to him a little bit. The Brown situation, the slapping the player on the head. What Matt Santos was positing during the break, Michael Lombardi, was that maybe the team started to take on a little bit of his erraticness, and that's what you saw yesterday. He does have a different vibe. I wonder what Brady would say, truth serum, about Bruce Arians, Mr. No Risk It, No Biscuit.
You know, I don't think things are buttoned up there. I don't think things are buttoned up. I think they have when they have all those weapons on offense, I don't see it buttoned up. The tension of detail, the kicking game, all those things. I think it's a little bit of kind of his personality. Hey, man, we're just going to get it going. You know, we'll see what happens. And, you know, it's one of those. That's what it looks like to me on tape. I've never asked, but just watching it, you know, I don't get the sense that they're pristinely disciplined, that they're able to really focus and really, you know, and make sure all the detail. I mean, just look at their game management. Look at the end of the game. I mean, you think Brady today whatever he thinks of Belichick or whatever, do you think he thinks Belichick wouldn't have managed the last part of that game differently?
And that's why I bring up,
Because Brady's been to every Friday of his career. Every Friday of his career, he would go into a meeting. He would sit in the lower seat on the right left side of the room, and he would watch Belichick go through the gotta-have-it players.
Right.
And Belichick would spend time, okay, when they want to make a play, it's Cooper Kupp. When they need a third down, it's Cooper Kupp. Where's the ball going? It's Cooper Kupp. So for Brady to see that Cooper Kupp has 64 yards in the final drive of the game when they got to have it, he's probably got to say to himself, well, this probably wouldn't have been the case in New England.
If I said 70-30, Brady comes back 70%, 30, he retires, is that about right?
I don't know. I can't predict. I think it's high. I think the fact that it's gotten out, that he's considering it, tells me that it's more serious than we think it is.
Also, if he wanted to make a move at coach, he could. If like that's to our point about
Arians, I think he's going to run a team. Why not run a team?
He could do whatever he wants.
Manning would. I mean, I'm sure he could go into television. Look, the Sean Payton rumor. You know, I got killed on my podcast on Twitter because I said that Sean Payton's undecided about his future. And all the New Orleans fans just have ridiculed me for the past 2 weeks. Not that it bothers me. I mean, it's no big deal. But you have no sources. You don't talk to anybody. Okay, I don't. So then yesterday when Rappaport comes out with it, you know, then it's all of a sudden now he's getting the wrath. But he obviously has better sources than I do. So, you know, to me, there's no guarantee. And then now today, Fox is considering Sean Payton if he wants to leave. For the job if Aikman leaves. So there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff as I've indicated. So I think that, you know, there's a lot of things that what happens if Brady decides he wants to quit? You don't think he would be able to do TV?
Of course.
I think if Brady quit, he would spend more time. I don't think he would go into that 17-week grind of doing games. I think he would go spend time with his family in Costa Rica and kind of get his ducks in order, if you will.
And you did report the Sean Payton. Well, listen, it would be a good time to bail. Their cap situation is perilous.
Yeah, no, it's in trouble. I mean, look, the Bucks are in trouble cap-wise, right? They put all their chips in, and I think, frankly, when he went there, he signed a 2-year contract. I don't think he thought he was going to play. He's always talked about playing to 45. He's 44 now. But this year might have been very taxing on him. I don't know. I don't know that, but it might have been very taxing. It looked taxing on him yesterday.
Report out now, the Broncos are down to 3 candidates. Quinn, of course, we know, probably the front runner, as you've reported as well. Kevin O'Connell, who's the quarterback's coach there. I think he may be called the offensive coordinator with the Rams, but that's McVay. And then Nathaniel Hackett. Those are the 3 names left for the Broncos.
And I heard they really, really liked Kevin O'Connell. I know they really liked Dan Quinn. I don't think Dan Quinn went and wowed them in the interview. I don't think he wowed them in the interview.
I think that
caused a little bit of a hesitation. And so I think that Kevin O'Connell kind of went in there and really caused a pause for, okay, maybe this is our guy. I don't know. I think it's between those two. Obviously, with Nathaniel Hackett involved, too, he'll have more time to spend with Quinn and more time to spend with Hackett. O'Connell, you know, but look, Sean McVay does everything in there. So, and they say Kevin's a great guy, and he was drafted by the Patriots, and my son worked with him before. So, you know, I'm sure he'll have an influence, but I think he'll have more time to interview because McVay is going to run everything. Plus, these two teams, that they know each other so well. They play each other twice a year. They know them. They know each other really well.
The Raiders are going to interview Jared Mayo, of course, Patriots linebacker coach.
I think they already have.
They already got him? Okay.
I think they're going to get DeMeco Ryans this week. I think the Raiders will make a decision by the end of the week. I think they will. I think they may just hire a GM first, let him hire the coach. I think they're interviewing Ed Dodds from Indianapolis today or tomorrow is one of their GM candidates. I think they've gone through this pretty extensively. I think they have a plan. I don't get the sense that Jacksonville's ready to make a decision anytime soon, but they could. You know, now that Byron Leftwich is out, maybe they go in that direction.
Mayo and Ryans are both great players. You know Mayo, I'm sure. Do you think he has the temperament and the right stuff to become a head coach?
I think he does. I think Ryans got to run a room,
sure,
and call a game. I think he's close more along. I mean, Mayo, Stephen Belichick calls the game in New England along with, you know, and so I think Ryans has demonstrated on tape clearly something that was unique and special. And I think the thing that really helps him for me is his team got better. They got better during the year. I mean, they improved their defense over the course of the season, which to me is what you always want to look for in a coach. I mean, is he making the team better? Does the team improve? You know, are they able to do the things that they need to do defensively? And when you look at them early in the year, I would say, you know, opening game against the Lions. Remember the Lions came storming back? You know, they weren't playing as well. Arizona put 437 yards on them with Colt McCoy out there, you know, when they played them at home.
So what a surprise.
But I think since then, they have played really well. They have played really well. And they haven't really been – you know, they play the run. I mean, they haven't given up a 100-yard rusher since they lost to Seattle in Seattle.
A little surprise.
And before that, they've really – the first 4 games of the season, they couldn't stop the run.
Yeah.
And then they kind of got control of it. But really, since week 10 of the season, they've made their opponent be one-dimensional, which is the key to what they're doing.
You know, the Quinn thing surprises me just because it feels like the one thing he would do well is interview, because he's all energy. He's been there before. You know, he's that rah-rah type, so you would assume that that would go over well in an interview. I'm going to give you a team. Just give me your vibe right now. The Bears.
I think it's Matt Eberflus, but that's just a guess. I think that Polian's going to orchestrate this, so it's a Polian disciple. It's a Tony Dungy disciple. It's going to be somebody from his tree. He's in complete control of the interview process, and I think it'll be somebody that he favors as the GM and he favors as the head coach, who he knows and knows all his people that he surrounds himself with.
In Jacksonville, we thought it was going to be, for a little while, it looked like some momentum for Bill Effing O'Brien. That seems to have calmed
that's
down
out.
A little
no,
bit.
That's done.
It's
no, that's
is
done.
That done because of him,
that's
or
done.
Is it done because that's, Jacksonville's moved on?
Jacksonville moved off on him. I mean, Balky's really trying to get, he's trying to get the guy in there that he really wants. He's been trying to get, you know, Josh McDaniels to interview for the job down there. I don't think that'll happen. You know, he's been trying to get the guys that he feels most comfortable with to go down there. And they're all over the place. I mean, they're not willing to they're telling candidates Balky's here, so he's going to at least stay for the draft. How does that work? I don't know. Houston is another one that's out there. I don't really know what Houston's going to do. They interviewed Josh McCown twice.
Miami vibe, Dolphins.
My first thought was Jim Caldwell. I think it could be Jim, although Brian Daboll's in New York for a second time today. I think New York's between Flores and Daboll, so I think there'll be a decision there.
Good one. How about Minnesota? Vibe.
Vibe will be some young coach that's going to embrace analytics.
Kellen Moore, that type of coach? Gannon,
somebody like that.
Jonathan Gannon.
Jonathan. Anybody's young and inexperienced, and they can mold them into, you know, they can be coach in charge, not head coach.
Raiders is going to be Mayo or D'Amico Ryans. Right here. We said it. What do you think?
No.
No. Not your boy Bisaccia either. He gone.
No.
When Mayock was out, you knew Bisaccia. I mean, hey, Mark Davis is making moves. Like, he generally, people think of him as a pushover. He doesn't seem to have that vibe right now.
I think it's one of the best jobs in the league because it's an old school job.
The city's getting into it as well here. Okay, we'll come back. Good stuff on the coaches from Michael Lombardi there. We've got Josh, a couple plays coming up next here at Lombardi Line.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
It's never too early to prepare for the big game, and we want to make sure VSiN is part of your plans. We'll be working with you throughout the postseason, and then we're going to be here on championship weekend, of course, and then for the big game. We're going to have 56 hours of free video coverage over at VSiN.com leading up to our sixth annual live big game betcast. It's the biggest game of the year, so make plans now to join the VSiN crew, betting experts, before, during, and after the game for all the action at VSiN.com. So we've got you covered. We did a few years back, you, me, and Josh, we did a halftime hit. You and Josh were out at, you were out at the Borgata. That's right, as we say hi to Josh. Mm-hmm. And but it's not in our contracts anymore, so we get to chill. We'll be grinding on Super Bowl Sunday, Michael. That's one that we'll give two solid hours. You know that.
Yeah, we'll give it. We'll make it work.
We'll give everything we got, and Josh will be a part of it as well. Josh, of course, Market Insights joins us. Unfortunately for Josh, he backed his boy Tommy. Have you sworn off Tommy for good now? Moving forward with the Bucks losing outright on the field, there, my friend.
Well, I'll never swear him off, guys. Patrick, Michael, great to be with you. You know, that's my guy, you know, till the end of time here. But I am kicking myself a little bit. You know, we did have a lot of those stats on those divisional home favorites doing well straight up. But kind of the whole time, you know, liability looking back on it was always with the Rams. So if you took the points, you know, +3 was always trending juice-wise down to Los Angeles. So, again, kind of taking your bias out of it. Now, obviously, you know, I mean, Michael, this one was crazy to me. I know you've hit on it already. But Todd Bowles blitzing there at the end and then not double-teaming Cooper Kupp, like, you know, maybe play that prevent defense, get it to overtime. That was kind of a peculiar move. But really, guys, overall, just what an incredible weekend of football. No matter who you were on, what number you had, just I don't think you can get better games than that in general. And we do have some updated stats here, guys, on the Super Bowl. So here are the moves that we have. And on the year now for the playoffs, we do have favorite 6-4 ATS. They went 3-1 ATS this weekend, under 6-4. You had 2-0 on Saturday, but 0-2 there yesterday. But new Super Bowl odds, Kansas City, your favorite, plus 120. They entered the weekend plus 400. The Rams, your second best odds here, plus 200. They entered the weekend plus 800. San Francisco, plus 450. They entered the weekend plus 1,100. And Cincinnati, plus 800 now. They entered the weekend plus 400. So, Michael, I think you're leaning on the Chiefs here. And by the way, great calling that over. But any of these numbers, do they appeal to you, Michael? Is there a team here, maybe not the chalk Chiefs, who knows, maybe they win it all. But of those three other teams, who would you lean on?
Well, you got to lean on the team that's the hottest, right? I mean, I think the 49ers at plus 450. I mean, the Rams, look, they went in and took down Arizona, a wounded team with a quarterback that couldn't make a play. And then this week, they dominated, even though the score says it was very close. They dominated until they shot themselves in the foot against the Bucs. So, you know, they've played well, but there's some variables in them. I just think the 49ers, what they've been able to accomplish going into Dallas and winning, going into Lambeau Field in that horrendous cold weather and winning without really doing much offensively, to me is fairly remarkable. And one thing we do know is defense, in spite of the history of the passing game, defense can carry a team when the defensive front is like that. And we saw it in the Super Bowl when the Giants beat the Patriots both times. It was their defensive front that really won the game.
TJ Watt and Nick Bosa are on another planet. That Bosa catching that, when Bosa caught Rodgers from behind when he was
rarely happens.
He had over pursued.
I said to Big Daddy, "This rare, you never see this." But I think the difference in the game, though, Patrick, and I think it's going to be the difference, is Armstead.
Armstead was
unblockable.
Everywhere.
Unblockable. They held him on every. They could have called holding on every play. He was unblockable in there. Your boy Kinlaw isn't even in there.
I know. They drafted him in the first round out of South Carolina. Hey, they did okay with the guy.
Think about that. They're not getting any out.
They let go of DeForest Buckner, and they replaced him with Kinlaw, and Kinlaw's not playing.
Right, and now they also don't have a first-round pick on the team this year. Think about that. The last, I think Kinlaw was, Kinlaw was. So the last two first-round picks for the Niners made any impact on their team, and yet they're playing for a conference championship game.
Yeah.
Tells you what a good job they've done.
And why don't they have picks? Never mind. Let's move on. The 49ers don't have picks moving forward. Well, they did. They went to South Carolina to get Kinlaw because they kind of hit lightning in a bottle with Debo from South Carolina. They went back to the well. Josh, early report on the openers here. It's interesting. I don't know if you heard, Josh, but Thomas Gable's up to 7.5 on the Chiefs. And, you know, you see mostly everybody else is sitting 7.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Patrick. So kind of, you know, here, I think some books were 6.5 to 7. 7 might be getting to 7.5. Again, favorites early, dogs late. I'm wondering if just off that incredible game we all saw last night, is there just this public belief of, hey, just don't bet against the Chiefs. I don't care what the number is. You know, just take them in this spot. But I'm thinking, hey, if you can buy low on Cincinnati and get a 7.5 with a hook, I'd actually be looking at Cincinnati here. But, Michael, I wanted to get your take on the total. I was doing some research here, and really kind of what we've seen in these AFC-NFC championship games since 2003, the over is 22-11 in these games, 67%. The over is 4-0 last two seasons in these AFC-NFC championship games. So, Michael, this game is the only one where the total immediately got hit to the over, open around 53.5. I saw an opener of 50.5. I think that maybe was an outlier, but it's now up to 54.5. We have seen Kansas City now 7-0 to the over their last seven games. It's early with the weather, but nothing in terms of crazy wind or snow. It should be like low 40s. Michael, is this maybe an over opportunity that you're targeting with a KC team that's cashed 7 straight overs?
You know, it's interesting it opened so low because the 34-31 game in the last one, it was 65 for the total in the last game? And this is 11 points lower. And the Bengals held the ball on that last drive of the game for so long, and they still scored 34 points. I mean, I think they ate 8 minutes off of that last drive. So, you know, we know this. The Chiefs are going to play man-to-man. They have a vulnerability to give up a big play. The Bengals need to make big plays. I mean, that's how they have to score. They can't put together 12-play drives because they won't protect well enough on 12-play drives. They need a hitch out the chase and let them run 70 yards, kick a field goal. So, you know, I mean, to me, if you like Cincinnati, I think you got to like the over because they got to strike with one or two plays. And I think the way the Bengals are – the way the Chiefs are playing right now, it's, you know, their offense is in gear. I mean, their two best players are getting the ball again.
You know, I put Tyreek Hill, like you, in a class by himself as far as athleticism and explosiveness. Chase, you can measure speed differently, Michael. That first step on the hitch, how he created separation, you know what I'm talking about, where he took that.
Yeah, no, I know it.
Oh, that
yeah.
First step is just remarkable.
And it's powerful. It's like what makes Deebo Samuel so good is it's not so much that he's got this elite. He's got deceptive quickness because he's so big and he's thick in his lower body. It's one of the things that makes Tyreek Hill so good is he's not a little man. He's a big man that runs big. He's hard to get on the ground. I mean, you see people bounce off him left and right. It's somewhat remarkable. But, you know, I don't think the Chiefs will mind getting in a shootout with the Bengals. I think the Chiefs feel like they can score on the Bengals. They can take advantage of it if they block that front.
That's a good point about Deebo, Tyreek, and Chase. They're all thick down low. Josh, the next one up is San Francisco and Los Angeles. Thoughts on the side and total as we open up here?
Yeah, so just in general, guys, when we get to these big games, typically I want to kind of wait it out. Let's let the public come in. Let's see if we have any injuries, COVID, who knows. But let's get some more clarity. Let these ticket counts skyrocket. Kind of like if you like the Bengals, let's see if it gets to 7.5. This is the exception, though. I'm actually thinking of getting San Fran right now at +3.5 because they open here, Rams -3.5. But all the juice guys, kind of similar. It's on a kind of reverse way where the juice was always on the Rams in their favor, 3 down to 2.5 against Tampa. Early now, all the juice is towards San Fran. So I think this 3.5 may fall down to 3 very shortly. A lot of familiarity here. I think getting the hook early in the week, you may be very happy about it later if this is a 3-point game. But a lot of reasons to kind of like San Francisco in this spot. The juice is moving in their favor, even though majority bets early. It is early, but on the Rams here after taking down Tom Brady. But also dogs that see a line move where the line either stays the same or moves in their favor. 40-27 against the spread last decade in the playoffs, 60%. Divisional dogs last decade in the playoffs, 57%. And a ton of familiarity here. That's what I kind of put a lot of stock into. There's not a lot of unknowns in this matchup. Remember, week 18, San Fran upset them 27-24 as a 3.5-point dog. Week 10, San Fran's had their number. Week 10, they beat them 31-10. That primetime game, I think they're a 4-point dog in that one. Good stats here. Jimmy G as a dog, 15-4 ATS in his career. Shanahan, 27-18 ATS in his dog career as a dog. So, Michael, what do you think? I'm thinking of getting 3.5 right now. I know it's early in the week, but I think this is trending down to 3.
I mean, we like San Francisco as a dog. I think you got to take it. I do think the betting market's going to come back in on it, particularly the way when you analyze and break the game down, how effective their defense was and the pressure that they can put on Stafford because he didn't turn the ball over, but they probably feel like they can get the ball out of his hands and make some mistakes. So, I mean, I think now is the time to get it. I think you got to do a good job of anticipating where the line's going to go. I think the Chief line's going up. I think the 49er line's coming down.
The familiarity with Shanahan and McVay, I mean, it's impossible to know each other more, right? I mean, on the same staff in Washington, played constantly. Shanahan owns them. So we shall see. Yeah, 3.5. Everybody's juiced down, headed to 3, Josh, as you mentioned. 46.5 on the opener. Okay, you've got Betting Across America coming later. You got a college hoops play for me tonight, bro?
I do have a college hoops for you, play, Patrick. I'm actually going to take the spread in Ole Miss against Florida. Florida's number one scorer, Castleton, is out. Everybody's on Florida, but they open -6. They're down to 4. I'll take the points here with Ole Miss.
Hotty toddy, Josh Applebaum.
Let's go.
All right, buddy. Thank you. Enjoy the day.
Thanks, Josh.
Okay, Market Insights is the pod. We continue here on a Monday. Lombardi Line, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN, featuring former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now, once again, here's Patrick Maher.
Okay, bet on more than the final score with One Game Parlay at BetMGM. One Game Parlay is an exciting feature designed to help you make selections within a single game from over 400 bet types, including team and player props. It's very easy. When you log in, BetMGM into your account and create your best parlay before the game starts. It's tremendous. They've got a ton of options. Also, when you bet through BetMGM, you get M Life rewards redeemable for room and dining at MGM resorts worldwide. Sign up today. You can also get up to $1,000 in bonuses. VSIN 1000, VSIN 1000. You can place one game parlay bets on football, basketball, and more, and you get those rewards. 21 years or older, all promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Got to be 21 years or older. 1-800-GAMBLER if you have an issue. I was laughing. One of my favorite quotes, I don't know why it just hit me. It was when Rob Ryan, I think he was let go by the Raiders, and his quote was, "I'll be unemployed for like 5 minutes." And it was just such a Ryan quote. He's like, whatever, I'll be unemployed for like 5 minutes. And I think he did get another job within like a couple of minutes. The reason I bring it up
to the Saints. Yeah,
he did. And the reason I bring that up is because this was shocking for everyone. Don Martindale, your boy Wink, let go by Baltimore. What was your thoughts there?
I think to me, I wasn't surprised. I mean, Wink was entering the last year of his contract, making a lot of money. And I'm sure that, you know, that the imbalance between they had so much money tied up in coordinators that I'm sure they probably wanted to see if they could get something a little less economical, a little more economical for them. So I think sometimes when you stay at a place so long and especially kind of have gone through the changes that they had. I mean, one thing about the Ravens now, they always get an A in a draft. They don't always have A players on the field, but they always get an A in every single draft. Watch that. Just do some research on that one. And so for me, I think it was just probably the time, and you could see both people, Wink and John, you know, who go back a long, long way to John's dad, you know, that they probably have run the test of time. And I'm sure that Wink will land easily on his feet. He probably will, you know, I mean, that depending on what Dan Quinn does, I would hire him immediately if I were the Dallas Cowboys, because I think his defensive philosophy fits perfectly to their personnel. But, I mean, he'll have a great opportunity. I wouldn't be surprised if Seattle was all over him to bring him in there.
He'll be unemployed for, like, you know, Rob Ryan. You know why that quote's so funny, because it's so flippant.
Yeah.
Like, I'll be unemployed for, like, 5 minutes. It's just such a matter of fact.
Rob was mad he didn't get the head coaching job. I mean, that's what he wanted to be the head coach, you know. So, you know, I just think to me that sometimes when you're in an organization so long and you have so many people that are coming from different ways and they have opinions of what's going on, and, you know, especially when the front office thinks the talent's better than the coaches, it's probably it's probably good just to walk away at times.
So this was a good job by Matt Santos. He posited, so Pittsburgh, Butler, their defensive coordinator, retires. What if Wink stayed in division?
Yeah, now that's a good question, because, see, I think Butler and Mike Tomlin go back a long way. They had a friendship and a philosophical understanding of what they wanted to do defense. Tomlin's going to be involved in the defense. So somebody who's going to run the defense for Tomlin is going to come from the Tomlin school of defense, and that would separate Wink from that. It's not because I think the Steelers wouldn't be interested. I think it's just because Tomlin wants somebody. He's not going to change the verbiage. He doesn't want to change the terminology. You know, he's going to bring somebody in who's going to kind of see it the way he is, and he's also going to run it too. He wants to be involved as much as anything, because that's his area of expertise.
You know, it's funny, as you say that, Tomlin's a Super Bowl champ been to another. Feels like this year, if there were any detractors on Tomlin, everybody's just completely on board with what he did with this team this year.
Yeah, I mean, look, I went through this with the coach. So I'm going through I finished a chapter on Hall of Fame coaches and who should be in. And I set a criteria, Patrick, based on, you know, Super Bowls, based on titles, really, at the NFL titles, based on a lot of different variables that come together. If you win so many games and have this win percentage, like, it has to be laid out. And so Tomlin is going to be in Canton. For his accomplishments and what he's done over his career, the analytical community can say he doesn't manage a game very well. Well, that's fine. But the guy's going to be in Canton because his record is Canton worthy. It's better than Bill Cowher, who they let in Canton.
It's incredible. He double-digit wins every single year. He in division, he and Harbaugh kind of under the radar a little bit, because Harbaugh wins pretty much every year as well. There was one more I wanted to ask you. Oh, quickly, just, and we'll get off the head coaches, but with the Giants being the first to hire the GM, the assistant there with Buffalo, Does that change their direction for head coaches? I don't know if I asked you specifically about the Giants before.
I think the Giants really are down to Flores and Daboll. They got Quinn in there today. I don't know if that's going to work. But, you know, Daboll was with the general manager in Buffalo. Flores has got a huge presence to him. Flores probably could get along with the general manager, you know, and would work there. The Giants have always been a GM, runs the team. The coach coaches the team, but there's been some migration between the two. I think the general manager, who the new hire, Joe Sheehan, I think that's how you say it. I think he would probably prefer to hire, and I don't know this, would prefer to hire Daboll. But I'm sure if you talk to Brian Flores, you're gonna appreciate his leadership. You're gonna appreciate his attention to detail, and you're gonna appreciate his philosophy of football on what he visualizes. And by the way, you see, as we talk about Flores now, did you see this today on, and this isn't a rumor, this is Omar Kelly from the Fort Lauderdale Sun Sentinel. He said he's talked to a very high, influential defensive player. Okay? You know where I'm going with this, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
And he claimed the prominent defensive player wasn't in support of Tua keeping his job. Quote, he can't make every throw, the unnamed member of the Miami Dolphins told Kelly. He's only going to take us so far. I'm wasting my career here if that's what we're doing.
Well, that's not nice to say about Tua. He shouldn't be saying that. First off, this is not up for debate. You have to cater your offense around him. He is incapable of expanding a playbook like what we saw last night with Allen and Mahomes. He's not capable of making throws. Like that's fair.
He's just not. He's not capable of running. He's not going to be the leader. You know, unless he can run and have a free lane. I just thought that was interesting that a player would come out now and say that. And I'm not suggesting that it didn't happen because I see it the same way the player does. It's just how dynamic and the shift is towards some of these things that people that are looking for coaches have in mind. Like, let me ask you this question. Maybe we should ask them all when we come back on Thursday. Is what are you going to do with Jimmy G if they go to the Super Bowl?
That's the $1 billion question right now. You mortgaged everything, and you mortgaged it for hopefully this year, definitely next year. And if Jimmy G takes you to a Super Bowl, Lance can't play next year. There's no freaking way.
Yeah, I mean,
no way.
Yeah.
Now, again, and you know what Amal's going to say. Amal's just going to come on Thursday and say he didn't play well in the game, and then you guys are going to fight back and forth about it. But Garoppolo, there is, like I said, there is a galvanization. The team plays for him. They care about him. And
you can
tell that.
Deny it.
There's no denying that.
And I wouldn't say that I wouldn't disagree that he played. I mean, he didn't play well. He made throws when he had to make a throw.
Sure.
And, you know, he was close to throwing a couple interceptions. That was concerning to me in the game, but yet he was able to get away with it, and they didn't get picked off. And, look, this game was – look, I think just based on the way the two quarterbacks play in the game, I don't think we give enough credit for how bad the weather was and how hard it was. And that field was slippery. And then when the snow came in later in the game, it was great to watch, visualizing if you got the fireplace on. But that wasn't exactly a conducive to a high score. I think the key to this weekend, we got to monitor Trent Williams, because the other thing I think we saw last week was the Packers, which we said before the game, the Packers defensive front was beaten up on the 49ers. They were beating them up up front, and they kind of got it settled down on that last drive, barely. But without Trent Williams, that would be even harder.
By the way, where did Kyle grow up? Did Kyle grow up mostly in Denver? Because
yeah. mm-hmm.
he's having a hard time.
And then he went to school in Texas. Yeah. You know, and then he went and coached at Tampa, and then he went off to the races. Yeah, I think he's more of a Cabo guy than he is a cold weather guy.
Yeah, I brought it up because it appeared it wasn't Tom Coughlin type cold. Remember Coughlin with the red grill?
Oh my God, poor guy. Poor guy.
He was.
I think Coughlin's still cold from that game. I don't think he's warm. I don't think I've warmed up from that game. I mean, geez,
that game did hurt. That game hurt to watch.
Yeah, that was painful.
Eli played great.
But you know, the fans need direction from LaFleur to tell him when to cheer, because those Green Bay fans are not knowledgeable on when to cheer. Thank God LaFleur's there to tell them when they have to make noise. If they didn't have that, I don't know what they would do.
BDV, Big Daddy Vince. The aforementioned Amal, and of course Mike Palm coming up next with Odds On. Michael, enjoy your day. Go write that book.
Thanks,
go write
Matt
that
Santos.
Book, man. Go, yeah, thank
I
you,
got
Matt.
To.
Thank
got
you,
to.
Kevin. Odds On's next. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.